This is the Marketing Development Podcast, brought to you by the Marketing Development Academy, the online community designed to help you develop your marketing business, skills, and career by exploring the world of marketing and entrepreneurship. Here is your host, Pete Everett.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and today I'm joined from the far side of the world by Mr. Pritesh Vora from Blog Vault. Pritesh, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pete. Excited to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. I know we've both had sort of things in the past month or so that we've had to rearrange this once or twice. So it's great to finally be here. It was in the diary. It's now happened. It's even better.
Yeah, I know.
So, For those of you that don't know who Pritesh is, I'm not going to try and do justice to an intro. So Pritesh, why don't you give an intro as to who you are and what you do at the moment, and then we can dive into your backstory in a minute.
Sure. I definitely don't want to bore people with that, but just a quick one. So I lead marketing and operations at Avertress, SaaS company. Where we have multiple products, Blog Vault, Malgare, and WP Remote. I've also co-founded another startup called Uninstall.io that was later acquired by another company. Mm-hmm. And, I've been an entrepreneur. I thought coming into this would be a different kind of a role, but I think that bug, once it hits, it stays forever.
Yeah, I can get that. Somebody, my wife asked me the other day, this is a true story. My wife asked me the other day what running my own business had done for me. And my answer was, make me unemployable. because
well, that's true.
Yeah. once you get that spirit, you can't really envisage ever going back to, and I know you now work for another organization as an employee, but you don't lose that mindset. You don't lose that approach. And I fully agree with that, fully resonate with that.
Absolutely. You hit the nail. And just one last fact, and maybe we'll talk about it much more later, but a fun fact is that before being part of this, the current organization at Blog Vault and Malgare, I was completely ignorant of the WordPress ecosystem. And, it's something that it was always looked at being a lower end technology. And from the moment that I've been introduced to it, having stayed in the system, I feel like kicking myself on the head and saying, okay, what did I miss on in life?
I've just got visions of you for your first week at work at Blog Vault, yeah. Thinking, what the hell?
Trust me. Yeah.
I suppose actually, this kind of leads us nicely into your first company and the journey into that. So, I'm aware that your background or that company was to do with basically analytics around apps, wasn't it? And the giving information to app creators about basically the uninstall rate of their apps due to the cost of acquisition, et cetera, et cetera. We were having a bit of a chat about this before the show. So do you want to give a bit of a background into that and what led you to that point and what interested you in that? Because I think that almost may flesh out a little bit why some parts of the world, some people in the world think of WordPress as a slightly lower platform.
I dare say not that again.
Hey, I think you've just written the title for... No, I'm kidding.
Oops, I'm in trouble. All right. So getting back to this, right? So I've been in multiple startups. In fact, one of the first startups where I was a partner almost 5 or 6 years ago, mm-hmm. was into virtual reality, where we worked on some really high-tech product around facial recognition. And we allowed people to try on a lot of different things on their face virtually, like their glasses or jewelry or makeup and things like that.
Yeah.
Right. So that was really interesting, and a lot of stuff that I was doing. Again, that was a startup. So I've had the taste of a startup right from there. And you know, that facial recognition thing, which we were doing 5-6 years back. And now I come back and see it's come a long way, but now the facial recognition thing is really in, you know, it's called virtual reality. Yeah. So it's been amazing to look back while I speak to you. So after that, I moved on to another startup, which was in the mobile. Again, that was also in the mobile domain, mobile app domain. And then I moved on to another startup, which was into mobile location technology. A very interesting startup. So we were into mobile location intelligence. What does it mean? And this, I'm talking of this almost, I think, 5+ years ago.
Yep.
When apps were relatively new in the ecosystem, 5 to 6 years ago, especially in India, the frameworks were still being were evolving. New and new features were being added by the operating systems, Android and iOS. So location was something which was not very clear, and we built a technology to detect location of a mobile phone using multiple systems, right? And it was, we take it for granted that now Google allows you to automatically understand where you are, what your location is. But at that point of time, it did not give enough information for mobile apps to understand or extract the location of a user. Yep. Now, we have thought of a lot of use cases. Just a couple of examples would be, you know, you're passing through a lane and it has some of the stores and the apps that you have of those stores. And if the app knows that you are in the vicinity, let's say a coffee shop, a Starbucks, and if Starbucks knows that you're in the vicinity and you are around, you're around maybe between 2 to 4 p.m., you are likely to, if given a nudge, you may opt to go for a coffee, right? Yeah. And that's the intelligence that we provided. So we let mobile app owners know where a person is. Of course, it's an opt-in technology. So users had to give consent to that. Yeah. But as soon as they knew, the app owners could push out certain offers or they can nudge the mobile app users to go visit the store and do a transaction. So this helped increase the transaction. Another very interesting case, let's say you land at the airport and you let's say it's an Uber and Uber knows that you've just arrived from some other place and most likely you are going to look for a taxi. Right now, as soon as Uber knows that, they can easily push out. They can again nudge you to book an Uber instead of taking something else.
You know, a real case scenario. So I flew into Geneva Airport in February, and I don't know, when we took off from Manchester in the UK, the flight was due to land at, I forget which way around it was, I think it was Terminal 2 at Geneva Airport. Okay. By the time we landed, the arrival had been moved to Terminal 1. So my taxi was waiting at Terminal 2. And we went out the road and then trying to find a taxi in a sea of taxis when you're looking for a specific one, which now he's now disorientated. We're disorientated because we don't travel to Geneva all that much. Having something that would have just said, yeah, you're mine. That would have been brilliant in that moment. It would have been, I know that's not exactly what you're talking about because you're talking about pushing the sale, but even just being able to track users down, you know, you're right, it is something that we
absolutely
and
you've given a brilliant example. Now just imagine if that taxi operator knew that you were not in Terminal 2 but Terminal 1 based on your consent, all those miscommunication could have been avoided, right?
Absolutely.
And And talking about a time when Google or Android did not provide that framework out of the box for app owners. So we built it from ground up. And we started offering this to app owners to help them leverage the power of location, because context can make a huge difference in how you provide your services or your offerings, right? And, yeah. And that was the genesis of, again, we were the first in one of the first ones to actually do that in the industry. And since we were very early in the game, it was more about getting early adopters, trying to find those early adopters who would believe in this and then execute it. But as we spoke to more and more app owners, we understood that the number one priority for all the, and we used to sell to product managers and marketing managers, mm-hmm. right? And we, with more and more conversation with them, we realized that, the number one challenge at that given point of time is more transactions, more acquisition and more transactions. I mean, these are two most important challenges, and that's their KPI.
Yep.
And we were trying to divert them into another goal, which they had not even thought about, which is engagement and retention.
Yep.
Right. And so it was never on their top three list. And they were always asking us questions around how do we acquire more users? How do we get more transactions? And one thing led to another. And this is the brilliance of, I want to take a moment here and talk about talking to real customers. Like, this is the difference that it can make. Once we spoke to, I at least spoke to at least 100 app owners. Mm-hmm. Trust me, I spent more than 6 to 9 months doing that. I used to visit their office. I used to speak to them, try and understand what is more important for them, where the challenges lie. And gradually we understood that they were spending a lot of money, but there was no way to understand how many users were still with them. They could never confidently say how many users are still with them and how many users have left them.
Yep.
And what I mean by stay with them, the app is still on their phone and the app has been uninstalled. Right? And that was a light bulb moment for me. I'm like, they're spending upwards of hundreds of dollars to acquire a customer, one user, and they have no clue whether he's still with them or not. At best, they can make a guesstimate of how many users are using their app on a daily or a monthly basis, but they really don't know who's not with them. And in that period, specific period, there was a boom of companies who were offering services of providing more app installs. So you pay them, let's say $1,000, and they'll promise you to get 5,000 app installs.
Yep.
Right. And that was the boom, and it just spread like wildfire. So suddenly people started talking about getting 1 million users, 5 million downloads, 10 million downloads, but they really had no clue of where the money was going.
Yep.
And they were not able to connect the dot. And that's where we saw an opportunity after speaking to them. We said, that's really insane. You're spending like hundreds of thousands of dollars a month on acquiring customers, and you don't even know whether they're still with you. You don't even know which channel you are getting those customers from is the most efficient one. And that was a blind spot for them. And that was a big pain point, because that could literally mean the difference between, in a competing space, that could be the difference between where you're spending your marketing dollars, how efficiently you're spending your marketing dollars. And that's when we started the venture uninstall.io, which is a category creator, the first in the industry, mm-hmm. To track the uninstalls of a mobile app. So it helps mobile app creators to understand who has uninstalled their app. What did they do before they uninstalled, and why did they uninstall? So we used technology behind the scenes to also give them an indication of why would they have uninstalled the app. Maybe the app experience was bad. Maybe they didn't like something in the app. Maybe something was broken. And try to join those dots and give them a reason, as well as we used to show them if they spend money on five different channels, which channel was the most efficient for them, which channel had the worst retention, right? So we combined all of this. I don't want to, I don't want to go into details. I get passionate every time I talk about it and I can't stop. I want to try and resist that. But in gist, that was the product. And in a year and a half, or no, in about 2 years, we got acquired by a Singaporean company where the product and the technology and the team were acquired by the Singaporean company and were absorbed in that company. And then I moved out. But in both of these, all these three startups, we were doing things which were way ahead of time. We were creating something from ground as category creators, right? All in the mobile ecosystem. And mobile ecosystem was assumed to be the ecosystem which was always ahead in terms of technology. Right. And from there, I met Akshat, who's the founder of BlogWorld Malkare. He's been in the WordPress ecosystem for, I think, forever now. And we were in the same circle and we've become good friends. And he said, you know what, I'm doing decently. I'm doing good. My business is growing. People, what we have built is fantastic. People love it. But we need a way to scale this thing. And I need someone to help me do that so that we can scale our business, our operations, everything. And that was the moment when it hit me. And I'm like, you work on WordPress?
Well, nearly a third of the internet works on WordPress.
Absolutely, and you won't believe I was that ignorant. I had no idea. I had no idea of, because I've always been in the mobile side of things.
Yeah.
I had no idea of the depth and the width of WordPress in the impact of WordPress on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I was like, something built on PHP, isn't that like a 15, 20 year old technology? So what's the deal?
You're not winning
here?
Many friends at the minute.
I know, right? I'm like, and something maybe we don't want to mention in the podcast, but I was met with some sort of skepticism when we started talking about it. But then I shifted my focus on the fact that, you know, he's super passionate about what he's built. Super confident about what he's built. And it's making a difference in the lives of people. The product is making real difference in the lives of people who use the product. And I said, you know, the technology really does not matter. If that's something which I've learned, the technology really does not matter. What matters is how it impacts the lives of people who use it.
Yeah.
And that's what got me excited. And I got on board this bullet train.
Well, we'll talk about that bullet train in a sec. I think you've touched on something that's really quite important. You know, my background has been entirely based in WordPress, and I've worked alongside app developers before to integrate things and to come up with solutions that cross both mobile and online platforms. But I've never really, I've never sort of delved myself into that level of programming. That said, I think from now that I run an agency and deal with customers and do a lot of those things you've been talking about, you know, speaking to your customers, understanding what their needs are, understanding what's really going to make a difference to them. A lot of them don't really care how something works, be it on PHP, that's a 15-year-old technology, or on, you know, I don't know, the latest version of Java or I was going to say Visual Basic. That's not what I mean at all. C Sharp. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. But the end user doesn't often care how it works. The main thing is that you can unlock the technology to do what it needs to do for that customer. And when you do that, that's when you show massive value.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
So Just so you've done brilliantly. I had like three questions lined up to take us on that journey that you've just taken us on. So I'm just going to skip through those. But we're now at a point where you've dropped yourself into the ecosystem of Blog Vault / Malcare. I'm assuming, because WP Remote's quite a new addition to the trio, isn't it? So
yes.
I'm assuming it was just the two of them at the time when you joined.
Right. In fact, there was just one Blog Vault.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So it's wow, time flies. So it's almost been 3 years since I joined Hands with Akshat for Blog Vault. Mm-hmm. And you know, you won't believe it, but when I joined, it was just a team of, I think just 6 months ago, it was just a team of four or five people.
Wow.
And only engineers. Hmm. Right. And Akshat was the one doing everything. He was running around chasing people to buy the product, to showcase the product. And I'm pretty confident that it's very difficult to find anyone as passionate as him in the WordPress ecosystem. I mean, no offense to anyone, but with the limited time that I've spent in WordPress, the amount of passion that he brings is it spills onto you.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, it just spills onto you. So when I joined, it was just barely a very small team, mostly of engineers. So, and a bunch of couple of other junior folks. And we just had Blog Vault, and you can imagine it to be as rudimentary as possible on the marketing and operations bit as possible. They were super strong on the tech side with very rudimentary things on the bare bones, not even bare bones. I would not even like to call what I saw that on the marketing and business side of things. So that's when we started the journey with this product, trying to first set the basics of the systems in place, and then move forward from there. Mm. Right. So almost a year, and it was only until after a year and a half that we launched our second product, brand, Malcare, which was a security brand. And, you know, it's been in the workings so Akshat has been working on it for more than 3 years. And, you know, he's very, very picky about this, that he'll not release anything which he's not absolutely satisfied with. Right. And I was like chasing him to let's release it. Once we release it, that's when only we'll get some feedback and we can improve on it. Right. There's never going to be a perfect moment. Let's release it. And we finally launched in Jan or Feb of 2018. Mm-hmm. So been almost 2 years. We've had a fairly good run with that, a phenomenal response for a phenomenal product. And we believe we are just getting started. And WP Remote is the next brand which has exchanged multiple hands. But we the direction in which we were going from Blog Vault to Malcare and the kind of stuff that we were building in the product, we knew that will the audience that we are going to be most beneficial for, which is site creators and managers. And they are going to need a whole host of things. And that aligned very well with our vision of what we want to achieve with letting site creators and manage achieve out of their website.
Yeah.
And that's when we saw this opportunity to get WP Remote, which was which is more a brand, which was more of a competitor for to manage WP and main WP.
Yeah.
But it was very recent. We acquired it. We have not done anything with it yet. We've just done a very, very, very soft, early soft launch. But now that's the area where we'll be focusing on in the next couple of quarters.
Yeah, that, you know, and I think you're right. So I've been a Blog Vault user and a Malcare user for that fact for a while. And, you know, we've those two products, they're both very good, but they are designed for particular for a particular use case almost, whereas I can see the logic in you acquiring something like WP Remote, which does bring you sort of, rather than just being two constituent parts of a support package, for example, you now are able to offer the entire kind of support package service to the agencies, who are then able to use that for their recurring revenue into their clients. So I can see how that's a logical acquisition for you and a logical next step for the progression of the company.
Absolutely, you hit the nail. And more importantly, we've acquired that brand and not the product as such.
Right.
Because we strongly believe in the product that we have made.
Yeah.
And where does it progress? And there are some super exciting stuff lined up for site creators and managers. One of the I'll just give you a sneak peek. I'm not allowed to talk a lot about it, but it's called visual regression. I'm not sure if you've heard of that or experienced that in the product. But especially for agencies and even site managers for that matter, you know, it's a major hassle when you run updates only to figure out something is broken.
Yeah.
And the process of validating it is very cumbersome, right? You spend hours and hours just trying to validate if your site is fine, if it's not broken. And that's a glorious waste of time and effort into something which could have otherwise been used into something more meaningful, right? Meaningful for your client. And that's an area, that's the inefficiency that we identified. Mm-hmm. And we started working on it in the last year. It took us a lot of time, but we built from ground up again, we built a visual regression framework, which will allow all site managers, when they run updates, our system will automatically visually compare the site before and after running an update, and it will alert you if it sees something is broken.
There you go. So that's really clever, because that's you know, traditionally the way that you need to manage that process is to run a staging version of the website, run the updates on the staging version, then manually check to see if it's broken anything, and only when you're confident that it hasn't been broken anything, would you then deploy from staging to live.
Right, absolutely. And you can imagine I'm sure you experienced that, the amount of time that goes into it. And, you know, there are always better things to do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I try and get anybody else to do that for me. Just anybody.
Yeah, I can imagine, totally imagine. I have to manage that site because I need to experience the product myself. And I'm like, can we get this done already? Right. So it's coming live. So there are a lot of exciting stuff that we are trying to put out for agency owners or site creators and managers, freelancers, developers who manage multiple sites to make their life easier and more efficient. And that's the direction that we are headed towards.
That's really exciting. So you're obviously talking quite a lot about your developmental advances when it comes to Blog Vault. One question I did want to ask you was, so I know that when you've mentioned that when you came to Blog Vault, initially it was just a single product. I know you have experienced significant growth over the last couple of years. So has your strategy, I'm aware that as a person, you have come from a very much developmental background rather than a marketing background as such. So has that growth been stimulated by kind of a technology first approach, you know, sort of speaking to your customers, finding out what they need, developing the features, then simply selling those features? Or have you had any other kind of marketing sort of strategy working in the background behind that?
Yeah. So just to give an idea, everything we do is organic for us. We spend $0 on acquiring a customer, mm-hmm. Zero external dollars, right? So whatever growth we have seen is organic. And just to give you an idea, we now get more than 1 million unique visitors a year on our site.
There you go.
Especially on our blog. So that's how we have grown from a few thousand to 1 million in around 2.5 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. So one of the primary focus areas for us has been content. Content has been at the centerpiece of anything and everything we do. Like from day one, we were extremely clear that we need to set up systems, we need to set up engines, we need to set up processes which are focused around content that can first add value to the visitors or the readers, and then eventually help us get more leads and customers. Mm-hmm. And we've done everything in our capacity. Everything that we do even now is focused around content and SEO.
Cool. So that
go ahead.
No, you know, you go.
Yeah. The only exception probably would be, and that was a very different experience for us, was while launching Malkare. Now, BlogWalt had been around for quite some time, and at least there were people who knew BlogWalt, about BlogWalt, mm-hmm. After having used the product. But Malkare was a completely new product on its own. And, you know, we knew that we are coming from behind. There are established players in the market, and we are coming from behind. And we knew that we had to do something to get attention, right? Get attention, because if we don't get people to try our product, and that I strongly believe is the number one problem facing all products, all new products, is discovery. If your product does not get discovered, you're already killed, whether it's 3 months or 6 months, but you're going downhill. And the company is going downhill. So we realized that early on, and we knew that we had to do something different in order to get that attention, get discovered, get more and more people to try our product and help us spread the word. And so we were very conscious, and we had started the groundwork for that before even we launched the product. Mm-hmm. And especially since we were coming from behind. So we decided that we are going to launch on AppSumo. And as soon as we did the soft launch, we straight away launched it on AppSumo as well. Mm-hmm. And as you know, that AppSumo is a platform which is, which has millions of visitors a month and can get you a lot of eyeballs in a very short period of time. And I'm talking about the AppSumo, where they used to have only one product dedicated for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And not the plethora of 50 apps that they have. Very unlike what they were doing, what they do now. So we knew that we are going to get dedicated attention for at least 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. And that will help us get in front of a lot of people, potential target audience, who, if they try, they're going to try us. And if they like what they see, they'll recommend it to others. And it fit very well with our target audience as well, because we were also clear of one very important thing. We always knew that we are not looking at AppSumo for making money. It's purely just a brand investment.
See, I was going to mention that to you because I wasn't, when you said the word AppSumo, I'll be honest with you, my eyebrows went up a little bit. Because AppSumo is a brilliant place to find bargains. Don't get me wrong. I've got yes. stuff off there all the time. Don't get me wrong. But since developing my own product, there's AppSumo scares me a little bit. So essentially the way AppSumo works is that if you're not offering a lifetime deal, then you're kind of not in the mix. So you're essentially yeah. offering a version of your product. It can be a limited version, granted, but a version of your product for a fixed fee forever. And that, as a product owner, as I say, that now scares me a little, because I understand the amount of care and support and, just general help that some customers need in order to use the product. You know, in order to run a service-based product business, you do need support teams and you need, help desks and all that kind of stuff. So to actually launch a product by doing that, I'm aware that it gives you a really good flavor of how well that product's going to be accepted into the market, but you're also taking quite a big gamble on the basis that those customers that accept that offer you're going to have to support forever for that one payment unless they upgrade onto other options.
Right. And you've hit it right on the nail. So we had done a very detailed exercise around the pros and cons of it.
Yeah.
What it's going to take. Now, being a product company, the beauty of software products is that it can scale. Mm. Right. And if you do your product right, the support can be dramatically reduced. And we were super confident about what we were launching. We are very happy with the product that we were launching. We knew that most of it is going to be automated. At the same time, we had also built a very well-defined plan, an upgrade path for them, right? Which we knew that if they upgrade, if they follow, even if a few percentage of them take the upgrade path, mm-hmm. it's going to keep giving us recurring money. And that in itself is going to be worth it. So that was the first thing. That was the first order, because we absolutely knew that we are not going to make money out of this lifetime deal, but it's mostly to get users.
Yep.
Now, if I can get 5,000 users in 2 weeks, which would have otherwise, it would have taken me maybe 6 to 12 months to get them, right? And by spending so much money, I would not even have known, and it would have had impact on everything that follows, right? Once you get customers, you get feedback, you improve the product, you make changes to the product, you get feedback.
Yeah.
And I was going to get all of that in the next 2 to 4 weeks. And so that dramatically reduced my cycle.
Yep.
For not just the product development, but also acquiring customers. And that's what we were banking on. That was the first thing. Second, we knew we devised a plan, a very clear upgrade plan for them. And it was not upgrade after a year. It was an instant upgrade.
Yep.
And we were very surprised that close to 30% took on that offer. So they took on a recurring annual offer with us. And so beyond the lifetime deal, whatever they have paid, they continue to pay us annually. So that was the second thing. Third was the word of mouth that was going to happen by the experience of the product. And that was the real win for us. Because we were confident about the product, we knew if we can get a few thousand people to use it, the word of mouth is going to spread. That's going to help us in getting more eyeballs for our content, as well as, you know, in our PR exercise.
That's great. I'm pleased you explained that, because I think there's almost a stigma that goes along with the, you know, as I said, as an AppSumo user, somebody who's bought things through AppSumo, there's a stigma that goes along with the products that you see on there that potentially they're there just to make a quick buck, essentially, and right. use the AppSumo brand to aid their marketing almost. And right. it's really good to hear that, you know, it was actually a strategic part of your plan, and that there was, you know, you were using it for a reason, or three reasons, in fact, and and that from there you were then able to develop the product more. And I think one of the key things that you actually said was, you know what, your AppSumo sales weren't actually there to really make money. There was a transaction, but it wasn't really there to make you money. It was there to do something else. And
absolutely.
So, you know, I'm not sure that many of the people listening to this podcast, I might be wrong, but I'm not sure that many of the people listening to this podcast will have products that they are ready to use on AppSumo or to release on AppSumo. But actually, you know, it's maybe a highlight into the background as to why AppSumo is there in the first place, and actually what you're doing for the companies when you buy their products through AppSumo is you're helping them with their feedback and their product development, which ultimately is going to help you in the long run anyway, because as an early adopter, you're going to get those updates and better functionality, et cetera, as time goes by.
Absolutely.
Great. So then from there, you've then sort of defaulted back to the type of doing everything through content. So using your organic SEO to drive sales, finding different types of content from different sources, all that kind of thing, link building, etc., in order to
yes.
inflate your profile.
Yes. In fact, there's one very specific. So when I say content, it includes, I encapsulate everything under that, which is SEO as well as a bit of outreach or link building that we do. Mm-hmm. Just like AppSumo, we had laid out another strategic plan, which I call the piggyback method. Now, since it was relatively new product, Malkare, we knew that it's going to get difficult to get, to directly attract customers because SEO is going to take time to kick in.
Yep.
Right. So there was another strategic thing we did in AppSumo. We made it, we asked the users to enable the badge on the site they were using Malkare, all the lifetime users. And it was optional for them. They can always turn it off, but it would be enabled by default. And all of a sudden, within a span of 2 months, we got like a few thousand backlinks. And that boosted our SEO profile significantly. But we knew that this is temporary. And you'll be surprised by how many people, I was actually surprised by how many people, how few requests we got of removing the badge. Most of them were okay with having it. And I was very surprised, honestly. We internally fought about the idea of whether we should do it or not because it's going to ruin the experience. But, for data speaks for itself. Data is the god. So we jumped our SEO profile significantly in those 2 to 3 months. But we still knew that we are not going to get, even if we push content, we are not going to get visitors right away. We needed to do more in order to complement our content effort. And that's when we started link building exercise, but a very specific kind of link building exercise. We were coming off a high on AppSumo where we've got rave reviews about our product. People were really liking what we had done. So we utilized that opportunity to, which I call something like piggyback method. We reached out to all the ranking content on our domain, which was a WordPress security. Mm-hmm. And we showcased them what we had done, how much we have achieved, the good reviews that we had got. And we got them to either try and then include us in their ranking content. Right. While we were parallelly building our own content. Now, that trick helped us because for us to rank was always going to take time. And we thought, why not piggyback on people who have already written phenomenal content and are ranking? And if you're lucky, if they include us, that will become a stream of consistent traffic with us, consistent traffic and leads for us. And eventually they'll also check out, once they come to the website, they can check out other content and thus we'll start increasing our overall profile. So that was another strategic decision we took, and it indeed has worked out really well for us in overall building our profile.
I think whatever your business is, if you're operating online, having a mechanism for reviews is absolutely key to you taking your sort of client acquisition through organic channels seriously. Because it ticks so many boxes, it gives you content, it helps you build links, it acquires you social proof, it gives you it means that your new customers aren't just taking your word for it. Because let's face it, we're all going to talk about our own products and services like they're the best thing in the world. You know, of course we are. Yeah. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to sell it. This is what making us money. But having other people do that for you. And that, for products like yours and for like SEO Hive, we can acquire those reviews quite quickly because it's a productized service. So we can follow up with people, a month later. If you're building websites for people where your production process is 2 to 3 months, then you're going to have to give it another month or so of use to see results, etc. And you might have to put a bit more legwork in. in order to, you know, track the website, track the traffic, speak to the client about inquiries, all of that, whatever it might be. But actually, if you can put that process in place, then the more you do it, the easier it becomes. And over a period of time, you then get that steady flow of reviews. And you know, how you do that, whether you use an external platform or do something yourself to make case studies or testimonials, whatever it is entirely up to you. But you're really missing out on a huge piece of the jigsaw if you're just sending products or services live and forgetting about them.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And that's where, you know, the work that you do with SEO Hive is so important. Link building is one of the most important things for any online business if they have to survive on organic acquisition, channel of acquisition. And it's phenomenal what you're doing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Most people aren't in a place like you are, where you've got a product where you can put an option in the back end to create backlinks. When people talk to me about sort of link building strategies, you know, I often try and put it in the sense that, to begin with, it's like turning the Titanic. You know, the start of any link building strategy is always quite slow, and you've got to be quite used to rejection. You get used to rejection anyway.
Right.
But actually, the more you persist with it, and the more that your authority and trust builds, it's basically when you start to see that there's a flow of links coming back in, and then your domain authority starts to increase in line with that, all of a sudden there's then a momentum to it. And that momentum does carry. I can't really explain why that works, but it's just the way it happens.
It's heard, right? The more people see you in more places, the more people talk about you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more people talk about you, the more that other people feel that they're missing out. So then they check it out, and then they include a link. And
FOMO.
that's exactly it. Yeah, you did right. And one of the biggest challenges we have with SEO Hive is that, you know, we have a link building pathway, and we share the links with our clients that we're prospecting for them, that we're, you know, these are the places that we're looking for links for you. And we don't get all of them, and that's just the way it is. But then on the same note, we then look at the stats when we get the reviews, the reports through each month, and see, well, hang on, we didn't get that link, we didn't prospect that link, But then you realize that, you know, those three links came from blogs that are operated by a company that you did prospect, but because we were tracking domains, you know, we can't possibly track every domain that every company owns. So we only track the domains that we prospect. And then all of a sudden you think, actually, yeah, so that one email potentially turned into four links over an 8-week period. And it, all of a sudden it then starts to piece together. So link building is one of those things where you are literally chucking stuff out there into the world to see what sticks. But the more that does stick, the more will stick when you throw more at it, if you see what I mean. And I think, you know, it has been really interesting to talk to you about how you've piggybacked your own content with a launch through, including AppSumo, to get data, and then having an ongoing strategy to do with content and link building has been really interesting. And I hope that the people listening can understand that you need to commit to these things. But just because you commit to one path doesn't mean that you can't have a second path that's maybe a little bit quicker, that's running in the background as well. So like your AppSumo, you know, your AppSumo strategy versus your content strategy. But ultimately, as you said, the data never lies. So if it works, keep on going.
Absolutely.
So, Pritesh, thank you so much for your time today. We're sort of coming to the end of our time together. If people want to reach out to you and connect with you a bit more, where's the best place that they can find you online?
It's on Twitter and email. My Twitter is @PritesHVORA. And I can be reached over email at pritesh@blogworld.net.
Fantastic. Well,
that works.
I'll make sure that there's a link to your Twitter account in the show notes. I may put your email address in there, but I don't want you to get spammed. So, listeners, you've heard the email address, okay?
Yes.
Show notes for this episode can be found at peteeverett.com/109. And it'll be released on the socials and stuff. So you can go and find links to the show notes there as well. So Pritesh, thank you so much for your time. It's been a joy speaking to you, and I hope to speak to you again soon.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Pete.